It is gone. A two-run home run for Reese Hoskins. Game over. Franco wins it.
He got it. Pulled it right out of the bushes.
Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 269. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter, at John Stolness. Coming up, I'm going to talk to Tim Brown, national baseball writer for Yahoo Sports. We're going to get into a bunch of stuff, including Mike Trout turning his nose up at Philadelphia. No, I'm just kidding. Mike Trout re-signing with the Los Angeles Angels. I must call them the California Angels because I am still stuck in 1986. Mike Trout will not be coming to Philadelphia, and we'll get into all the reasons why. Also, the Phillies get into a little trouble with gaming during the game last season. I'll get you some spring training notes and my 25-man roster prediction. Also, a former Philly that was picked on by a good majority of the fan base is going to be on the Wall of Fame later this year. Plus, I will have your stat of the week. But a reminder, folks, to subscribe to the whole Good Fight podcast feed. That way you get Hittin' Season, continued success, and the dirty inning. And if you haven't done so, please leave a review and give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts. And tell your friends about the podcast. Tell them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is they get their podcast. And please leave a message at the Good Fight and the Hittin' Season voicemail. Just dial 215-650-7270. We've created a phone number for you guys to give us some feedback. We did an entire mailbag show on episode 268 with voicemail calls from you, the fine podcast listeners. So again, it doesn't have to be a question. It could just be a comment about the Phillies, something you've observed, and the really good ones we'll put on the podcast. 215-650-7270. Your chance to be heard. Just leave your name, where you're calling from, and a quick message. And if it's good, we'll play it on the podcast. You can also get in touch with us at hittinseasonpodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's hittinseasonpodcast@gmail.com. One last thing. We are really ramping up our bonus material on the Patreon site. I just did a 15-minute video of a new series that I'm doing called Opening Up Old Baseball Cards with your pal John Stolness, where I'm going to be opening up some old baseball cards with you guys once a week or so. And this week I opened up a pack of 89 Tops and a special other type of top series from the 80s, which I hadn't been exposed to before. But I think it's a pretty fun 15-minute video, and you can only get that by jumping on the $5 a month tier and going to patreon.com/hittinseason, signing up, and you'll get a ton of great material from myself, Liz Rocher, and Justin Clue. Again, that's patreon.com/hittinseason. All right, well, the big story that everybody's talking about so far this week is, of course, Mike Trout signing an extension with the Los Angeles Angels, an extension that pretty much surprised everybody. I would imagine it even surprised Bryce Harper, who was the highest paid player in baseball for about 2 weeks or so. And to his credit, Harper was very magnanimous about the whole thing. He was very gracious about the whole thing. But Trout signs a 12-year, $430 million deal. It's a 10-year extension added on to the 2 years. They basically ripped up the last 2 years of his contract and gave him a brand new 12-year, $430 million deal that'll pay him $35 million a season. Obviously, the Bryce Harper recruitment did not go as well as hoped. And, you know, I do wonder a little bit if all of the noise Bryce Harper was making spurred the Angels to do something sooner. Now, I don't know that it did. It probably didn't, because Trout is still 2 years away. And again, Mike Trout doesn't strike me as the type of guy who is going to be one of those dudes that's like, trade me, I want to get out of here. I just don't think he's that kind of guy. And obviously, he really likes it in Los Angeles. He likes being a Philadelphia sports legend without actually having to play for a Philadelphia sports team. And this is something that I had been saying all offseason, because there were people out there who didn't want the Phillies to go after Bryce Harper or Manny Machado because they wanted to save their money for Mike Trout in 2 years. And a lot of us kept harping, you absolutely must not waste an opportunity like this for an opportunity that might never come around. And I long believed that that it was a very strong possibility that Trout would go back to the Angels, that he would sign a long-term deal with Los Angeles. And at the end of the day, it proved to be correct. Trout is going to be an Angel for life. His contract, like Harper's, contains no opt-outs and a full no-trade clause. And Harper, to his credit, as I mentioned a minute ago, was very gracious. He texted his congratulations to Trout. Apparently, he told Trout over the winter that he wanted to get a big deal so Trout could then blow his deal out of the water. Harper said, "I've got more money than I'll know what to do with." This is the largest contract in the history of North American sports, surpassing Harper's deal at $35 million a year. It also makes Trout the highest paid player on a year-to-year basis. So that's important to note as well. No player in baseball history. If you're wondering why Trout is worth all of this and you don't get to watch Mike Trout and you don't look at baseball statistics or just have any general knowledge about baseball at all, I'd be surprised if you're one of those people and you're listening to this podcast, but no player in baseball history has put up more wins above replacement than Trout through their age 26 season. 64.3 wins above replacement, as noted by Baseball Reference. Trout ranks 8th all-time in home runs, 9th in runs, 4th in walks among players through age 26. He's already won 2 MVP awards, has a career slash line of 307, 416, 573 with 240 homers, 648 RBIs, and 189 stolen bases. Washington Post reporter Neil Greenberg noted on Twitter that the Angels have paid Trout $78 million for his production already from 2011 to 2018. Fangraphs estimates those years were worth $494.5 million on the open market. So if you think of his $430 million deal moving forward as back pay, the Angels are essentially getting 12 years of Trout for free. Obviously, the financials of baseball don't work that way. But this deal makes sense in a lot of ways for both sides, for Trout and the Angels. But from a Phillies perspective, which is what we really care about, I have three main things to say about Trout signing with the Angels. The first is that it's a little bit of relief that the Phillies don't need to hold any payroll space open for Trout at this point. They can focus on the things that they need to do in the here and now over the next 2 years without having to try and pry the window open with a crowbar and hold it open for Trout to climb through. And so that means maybe even adding Dallas Keuchel here at the end of the spring, or going after Anthony Rendon if he doesn't re-sign with the Nationals, or Mookie Betts, or Chris Sale, Gerrit Cole, Justin Verlander, all free agents over the next couple of off-seasons, provided those superstars don't also sign contract extensions with their current teams. The Phillies don't have to worry about earmarking any cash for guys like this. They can just spend, and they can focus on getting guys that are available, not waiting for guys that might be available. And as Buster Olney noted on his Baseball Tonight podcast, he said, "It would not surprise me at all to see Chris Bryant end up with the Phillies. He's friends with Bryce Harper. He's represented by Scott Boras. You can see a long-term hole at third base in Philly. If Alec Boehm doesn't pan out, then yeah, there is a long-term hole at third base. But Chris Bryant is not going to be a free agent for quite a little while." So it's putting the cart quite substantially before the horse. But it is interesting that Olney's mind went there. And thankfully for Buster, he didn't have to sell the family farm. The Phillies did get one of Machado or Bryce Harper. Anyway, I think in that way, Trout re-signing with the Angels or signing an extension with the Angels helps the Phillies in that it doesn't, it's not clouding their mind anymore, and they don't have to keep money in reserve for Trout. Number two, it will allow us to enjoy the 2019 and 2020 teams as they are. We don't have to keep thinking about 2021. We'll be able to look at this team, see this team for what it is. This team that opens up their season next week at home in Philadelphia against the Atlanta Braves. We can take a look at this team, the team led by Bryce Harper, by Aaron Nola, by Rhys Hoskins and JT Realmuto. This team that is on the cover of the Sports Illustrated Major League Baseball preview issue that'll be hitting newsstands soon. This 2019 team, these players, these guys, we can get behind this team without worrying about salivating over Mike Trout coming in a couple of years. We can focus on enjoying the team as it's currently constructed. And the third thing I think it does is it makes it all the more clear that the Phillies are now Bryce Harper's team. I mean, they were Bryce Harper's team, but I think thinking about Harper sharing an outfield with Trout was just going to become an obsession in the minds of Philadelphia fans. And I'm glad we don't have that for the next 2 years. I really am. I would have loved for the Phillies to get Mike Trout. Don't get me wrong. When I say all these things, obviously I was disappointed when I saw Trout had re-signed with the Angels and that the dream was dead. But I must be honest with you. I didn't think the dream was really alive all that much in the first place. Now, as Harper started talking more and more about it this spring and openly campaigning borderline tampering to try and interest Mike Trout, and when you saw Mike Trout talking about his future in Los Angeles, he seemed to be hedging and hemming and hawing quite a bit about his future there. And so the speculation that I had was, I think that he needed to see more from the Angels before deciding whether or not to commit to them. Because he is taking a risk by signing long-term with a team that appears to be years away from contending for a World Series. They're certainly not going to be there in 2019. I mean, Trout has played in one postseason series in his career, a three-game American League Division Series sweep at the hands of the Kansas City Royals in 2014. And that's not going to change in 2019, I don't think, unless the starting pitching staff is a lot healthier and a lot better than I think it is. Trout's not going to the playoffs this year. Now, listen, the American League is a weak league right now. You've got three really, really good teams in the Astros, Yankees, and Red Sox. And then everything else, you've got, you've got the A's in the mix. You've got the Rays in the mix. Maybe the Twins. The Angels could certainly grab a wild card spot if things go a little bit right for them this year. And Mike Trout must have been told by Artie Moreno, their owner, that they were going to build the team around him. But from a Phillies perspective, I wanted him on the Phillies in a couple of years, but I am glad that we're not going to be talking about it anymore, that we're not going to be focusing on it. And we in this city, we want the things that we don't have yet. We were pining so hard for Bryce Harper. And then as soon as we got Bryce Harper, we shift our attention to, okay, well, who's the next guy we're getting? We need to stop doing that and just enjoy what we have for 5 damn minutes. Because this team is a contender. This team is a World Series contender right now. You have the face of baseball in Bryce Harper signed for 13 years. There is absolutely no need to be obsessed with Mike Trout. And I honestly think after this podcast, unless Mike Trout is just doing great baseball things, and I just want to talk about Mike Trout as a great baseball player, we don't have to talk about him and speculate about him coming to Philadelphia anymore. I find that to be a relief. I'm glad he did this now. I'm surprised he did this now. I would have thought he would want to wait to see how the Angels played this year before committing the rest of his career to LA, but it's clear he loves it there. It's clear the Angels, he feels like playing for the Angels is his home. That's his home, not Philadelphia. Los Angeles and the Angels are his new home, and that's great for him. And he's been getting a lot of criticism in public circles about being the richest man in baseball, but also being irrelevant. Well, you know what? If he goes to the playoffs, he's not going to be terribly irrelevant. You know, Cal Ripken Jr. played his whole career in Baltimore, which is not a major market, but Ripken made that city and that club relevant. They just have to get good. The Angels just, listen, if you're talking basketball, were the Golden State Warriors a marquee team before Steph Curry came along? No. The Cleveland Cavaliers weren't a marquee team until LeBron James came along. In the New England Patriots were not a marquee team until Tom Brady came along. This happens in sports. The Phillies were not a marquee team until that 2007-11 run when you had all those big stars. And for a while there, the Phillies were one of the number one destinations in baseball. Great players make teams good destinations, make them relevant. If the Angels can get to the playoffs, they'll be relevant again. The problem is they just haven't been able to get to the playoffs. They've had a lot of bad injury luck. Mike Trout's done everything he can, and he hasn't had the help around him. And it'll be up to the owner now to, and Billy Epler, the GM, to construct a team around him. But he's not coming to Philadelphia. He's not going to be a Philadelphia Philly. And I'll be curious now to see what the reaction is going to be. I did see that one Eagles fan canceled their season tickets because of this. Man, that's on you. You just didn't want the tickets bad enough. I'll tell you what, because if you're canceling your season ticket plans because Mike Trout chose to stay with the Angels and not leave his future open and potentially come to Philadelphia, you're an idiot. That's an idiot move. I mean, that's all that is. You're just dumb. And there are going to be fans. The first time Mike Trout comes to Lincoln Financial Field this year and gets handed a football by Carson Wentz or he's shown on the Jumbotron, there's going to be a mix of boos and cheers. It might even be more boos than cheers. And you know what Mike Trout will do? He'll smile. He'll give you that wry smile, that I know what this is type smile. He'll give you that I'm from Philly type smile. I deserve it. Bring it on. And you know what? The crowd will eat it up. It'll happen the first time. And then after that, if it happens again over and over again, it'll be a joke. And the rest of the national media won't get it, because they won't get how we are. But Philly fans will boo him, and it'll be an inside joke between Philly fans and Mike Trout. And everybody will get their panties in a twist about it. But that's all it's going to be. I think the relationship between the city of Philadelphia and Mike Trout will be just fine in the long run. He's not going to play here. And frankly, playing in Philadelphia and failing in Philadelphia probably would have been the surest way to ruin his legacy in Philadelphia. So congratulations to Mike Trout on your deal, and wish you lots of luck in Los Angeles. We'll see you in a couple of years. I think next year they come back to Philadelphia. Either that or the Phillies will go out to Los Angeles to play him. So the Phillies might not see him again for another 6 years, 5 years, whatever it might be. You know, it might be 2023 or 24 before he comes back to Philadelphia, but he's going to be an Angel for life. Mike Trout eschews Philadelphia and decides to spend the rest of his career in Los Angeles. And I think from a Phillies perspective, there are a lot of good things that will happen now as a result of that, even though at the end of the day, I would have liked to have seen them get Mike Trout. Up next, we're going to talk to Tim Brown, national baseball writer for Yahoo Sports. We'll do that next right here on Hittin' Season. And joining me to talk a little bit more about the Trout signing and some Philly stuff as well is Tim Brown, Yahoo Sports baseball writer, national baseball writer for Yahoo Sports. You can follow him on Twitter at @TBrownYahoo. Tim, thanks for coming on Hittin' Season. How are you?
I am good, John. How are you?
I'm doing great. I talked to your buddy Mike Oz a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, and he informed me that that the MLB podcast, the Yahoo MLB podcast, is going to be getting up and running at some point this year, too. So looking forward to hearing that. I know you guys hosted that with Jeff Passan last year. And so one of my favorite baseball podcasts, if you guys don't subscribe, do you have any idea when your first episode might be for this year?
I think we're kicking it off after the sabbatical, the winter sabbatical, first week of the regular season, I think. We still have meetings going on about that, John.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you guys didn't have to record through the four-month slog of the off season, because that was those were some hairy times trying to get through all that, man.
At least it would have been something to do.
Yeah, that's true, too.
stare at the phone that wouldn't ring.
Absolutely. Well, listen, let's talk about Mike Trout a little bit. I started off the podcast talking about the contract that he signed. And, of course, as a Philadelphia Philly fan, my main question regarding Mike Trout staying with the Angels is Philadelphia going to be okay, Tim?
You mean the city? Do you mean the team?
Well, the city's beyond help a lot of times, Tim. There's not much I can do, but no, it's kind of a facetious question. But you know, as I look at the whole thing, I know a lot of Philadelphia fans had their hopes pinned on Mike Trout coming here in a couple of years, and I was never fully on board with that. It seemed like he has a great thing out there in Los Angeles with the Angels, and why would you want to bring yourself into the microscope of the Philadelphia market when you don't really have to? And I think this does make a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, I'm not sure even Mike thought about it that hard. I think he's just the kind of guy who sort of likes where he is, likes familiarity, likes the people he's around, likes things simple. I, I honestly don't think he thought of it as much as ducking, say, a Philadelphia or a New York or Chicago.
Yeah.
Or even like the varsity team in L.A., which is just up the road about an hour. It's more to him, you know, I'm comfortable here. They treat me well. They treat me with respect. And they're going to pay me plenty. So I'm going to stay. I just think that's, if anything, my guess would be that he had probably some concerns about never playing in October, mm-hmm. and probably needed some assurances as to what's coming, what's the plan. If I'm making 35, 36 a year, what is going to be left over once, say, the Pujols contract runs out, in terms of, you know, are they going to get some pitching? Are they going to develop some pitching first off? And if not, then can they go out and get some pitching? Are there going to be people around me in the lineup who are in their prime and productive and can be, good defenders as well? There's a lot going on there. And you know, they just got out of the Mike Scioscia era, which went 20 years there. And what's the plan with Brad Ausmus? Is he the guy now every day? Or is that going to be up in the air too? Is Billy Epler, who's got 1 or 2 years left in his contract, is that the plan going forward? So my assumption is he got a lot of good answers and decided he'll stay where he's comfortable. He appears to be a very loyal guy. And, again, they've treated him well. He's happy. I don't think it takes him much to make him happy. So if there's a baseball game to be played and he feels comfortable, I think he's good.
I guess the thing that surprised me was the timing, because my thinking was that you mentioned he wants to go to a World Series. He's only played in one playoff series in his life. It was 3 quick games against the Royals in which the Angels got swept. And, you know, he only got a handful of at-bats in that 3-game series. And I would have thought that he was thinking about seeing what the team did this year before deciding whether or not to jump into a contract extension. So to me, the timing surprised me, not the decision necessarily. But I guess you're right. He did get enough assurances, although he is taking some heat from some corners, and not just in Philadelphia, that he has basically become a very rich guy who's obviously in a very good place, but is playing, as you said, for the JV team in Los Angeles, that he's kind of rich and irrelevant. I don't agree with that, but what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that folks who assume Mike Trout is anything or who want him to be something more than he wants to be himself. Mm-hmm. You know, those trappings, the endorsement deals, the fame, all that stuff, those conversations about the face of the game and things, I just don't think they're important to him. I think Mike Trout turns down a lot of stuff because what he would prefer to do is live his life. And play baseball and go home to his wife and in the off season go home to New Jersey. And with those expectations, with those responsibilities that come with, you know, the big deals and all, that chews away at your life. And I think he's just a simple guy who probably thinks he's being paid grotesque amounts to do something that he really enjoys. So, you know, I think it's interesting to see the criticism of that when here's a guy who just knows what he likes, is going to do that, clearly is well paid for it, and has none of these great needs to be what other people want him to be. Mm-hmm. Other than, I mean, it should be good enough just to be the best player we've ever seen, or close enough to it in the conversation of. And he's happy, and I think that should be enough for all of us, I think.
Well, it's enough for me. And you know, again, I was not pinning my hopes on him coming to Philadelphia. That never really felt totally realistic. And from a Philly standpoint, there's some positives to it, which I mentioned it earlier in the podcast, but it just allows the Phillies to kind of get on with their lives. And really, Phillies fans and podcasters and bloggers to get on with their lives. We can actually enjoy the 2019 team as currently constructed without constantly looking at 2021. But With regards to the number, you mentioned we are watching the best player in baseball, and he might be one of the 5 or 10 best players in the game's history. Is $430 million a fair number for him? And do you see any free agent coming over the next couple of years that could go over that number?
I mean, I suppose guys are kicking around names like Mookie Betts and all, and I suppose if you were to have put Mike Trout out on the open market at 28 and a half, 29 years old, you certainly could have seen a bigger number. But that's a good question. You know, again, I mean, it would have been different had, okay, if Betts comes out, you're going to have the Red Sox bidding. You could have the Yankees bidding. You could have the Cubs bidding by then. Apparently the White Sox have money to spend. What does it mean about the Dodgers? Are they going to start spending at some point again? So, yeah, you put them in a competitive bidding sort of climate, and we certainly could see a number as big as that. But, boy, I tell you, I mean, what it confirms to me when Machado's getting 300, Harper's getting 330, Trout's getting what amounts to basically 360 over 10 years, There is certainly plenty of money out there to be had.
No doubt about it. And it's kind of funny. Harper was the highest paid player in baseball for a span of 2 weeks after all of that holding out.
Well, I think he held on longer than Machado did.
That's
so
true.
At least he had that.
That's absolutely true. Let's switch gears here for just a second. And I mentioned your former colleague at Yahoo, Jeff Pazin, a second ago. And he,
I don't know who that is.
I'll send you his resume later, you know, his LinkedIn account. Anyway,
he said to me.
Oh, man. He reported on the Carlos Santana TV destruction deal with the Phillies clubhouse late in September, where, you know, apparently some mixture of young and veteran players were playing Fortnite during games as the Phillies were engaged in their epic collapse last year. And it's been a big story in Philadelphia, obviously. You know, it kind of makes me wonder as I'm thinking about this, you know, do you think that's a big deal for players to be playing a video game during the course of a game if they're not going to be in the game in any, because you've got 40 guys in the locker room now and 40 guys in the dugout. Is that a huge deal? What did you make of that whole incident?
Well, I came away with two questions from that. One is, if indeed they were younger or peripheral type players who were not acting as professionally as perhaps they should have, and a veteran went in and handled it, isn't that the system working? Isn't that the way it's supposed to work? The second question is, why weren't they engaged?
Yeah.
Why wasn't it interesting enough for them to go watch their teammates play baseball? Now, I understand that the Phillies at the time were going rapidly from first to third and from relevance to irrelevance, and that this will of course reflect badly on Gabe Kapler, because I think that's where today most things seem to lead. He's got a magnet on his butt for these sort of things. My guess is these sort of things happen fairly often, maybe not ending with a shattered TV and a check on the manager's office to cover those sort of expenses. But I think these are the sort of things that happen in seasons that slip away and people find themselves disappointed or otherwise sort of distracted by the coming off season when it becomes a sure thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't get too crazy about it. I honestly came away with more respect for Carlos Santana that I did with some sort of judgment of Gabe Kapler. I do think that second question is worth some asking, which is, if indeed they weren't engaged, why weren't they? And how do you improve that situation? Yeah. But I think you made a great point. At that time of year, when you've got somewhere in the range of 35 or 36 players milling around, most of them knowing that they're not going to play, it leads to a tougher situation. Maybe the new roster rules will help change all this when you can only have 28 up at a time.
Yeah,
that'll maybe help that sort of thing out a little more. But certainly, as with all things Phillies and Gabe Kapler worth keeping an eye on.
And the Phillies said that they're not going to allow video games an hour before game time, and it was the second to last game of the season, too. But I agree with you. It does kind of it does reflect poorly on Kapler to a degree, but it's also important to remember it was Kapler's really his first year as a manager anywhere. He'd never been a manager, really, except for one season in the low minors at any of his stops. But it also, as I'm thinking about Carlos Santana's role in all this, I do agree with you. I think I can totally understand. He was at the end of a frustrating year personally. He was probably pissed off and smashed some TVs out of frustration and left a check on the manager's desk. But I wonder why it's coming out now, why he's talking about it now, because the Phillies clearly did not want this to get out. They told everybody to keep it quiet, which makes me wonder, and I guess it doesn't really matter since Santana's on the Indians now, but what he thinks of Gabe Kapler to kind of tell this story to the public, which I think he would have to know would reflect poorly on Kapler. Am I reading too much into things there, Tim?
Well, yeah, I think that the reason he commented on the story is because someone came to him and asked him about it for the first time. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it had gotten out.
Yeah.
It was certainly not a case of Carlos Santana running to the press saying, hey, Gabe Kapler's a bad guy. That's not my sense of how it went down at all. They had kept it, you know, what happens in the clubhouse stays in the clubhouse, and had kept it in there until what typically happens is someone who was in there at the time, as you well know, mm-hmm. tells a friend, an agent, something, and that's how these things start to filter out. So, and then eventually it gets to someone who's got an axe to grind for the manager or the general manager, or something like that, and that's how it lands in a reporter's inbox. At least that's been my experience with these things.
Fair enough.
So I don't think Carlos is not playing a trumpet trying to get everybody roused up, I don't think.
And that would surprise me, because everything I hear from him is that he's a great guy, great team guy, and all that, too. It was a question rolling around in my brain. Thought it was worth checking out. But let's talk about the play on the field. Let's talk about the Phillies. They're on the cover of Sports Illustrated's baseball preview issue with Harper, Realmuto, Nola, and Hoskins on the cover. What's your over-under for this team as far as wins this year, and where do you have them stacked up in the National League East?
That's a good question. I hadn't thought about, how many wins. I have them second in the East, and this is like almost my entire argument, is baseball has this spectacular sense of humor. I remember when Don Mattingly played forever, and the sort of the sadness in that was that the Yankees were almost always terrible.
Yeah.
And then the moment he retired, they never lost another game. Yeah. And so this is what I'm thinking in terms of the Nationals. You know, the Nationals just can't seem to get through sort of that division series thing and everything. And, you know, they had this big stud come up and be, for the most part, everything they wanted him to be, and couldn't break through. And then he leaves, and then they win the division and win the division series, because that's just the way things go.
Right.
They also, you know, I mean, it's also very easy to fall in love with Scherzer and Strasburg and Corbin,
sure,
and Rendon and Robles and Soto and those guys. The Phillies, for me, are just a notch behind. I need to see Pivetta, Eflin, Velasquez, Eichhoff, you know, those sort of guys. I like their offense a lot. I think it's deep, particularly if McCutchen still has another season or two left in him. I'm very curious to see how it plays ultimately at center field. But I do like this team's offense. I think they're going to catch the ball as well. I really like Realmuto. I think that was a sort of a pivotal move for them. But I need to see that starting pitching work over 6 months before I can sort of lock in on them. I think that the Nationals are just this much better in the moment. And that changes. We all know that changes dramatically. You know, guys get banged up on both sides. I just talked to someone recently, and I was picking the Yankees to go to the World Series and win the World Series and win that division. And it was no sooner out of my mouth that Severino grabbed his shoulder, and I was standing in the Yankee clubhouse yesterday when they announced Dellin Betances is going to start the year on the injured list. And I thought, you know, this is how fast these things go. So I like the Phillies. I think they're better. I do believe that Kapler can lead them to relevance, end-to-end relevance. I just need to see that starting pitching sort of get some traction.
Yeah, and it's a loaded National League, too, so those wild card races are going to be ridiculous because you've got three teams in the National League Central that are on merely four if you count the Reds, and the Reds could be better this year. They've made some improvements. You look at in the West, you've got the Rockies and the Dodgers, and hey, if the Padres land a Dallas Keuchel or something like that here late in the spring and he gets there by May, you know, maybe the Padres get a little bit frisky or something like that, and that's the scary part about the National League this year is if you don't win the division, there's going to be an absolute dogfight for one of those two wild card spots, and that's what I'm a little bit concerned about too, is because you've got really four teams in the National League East that could also go to the playoffs, so it's going to be a rat race.
I agree, and I think, you know, for all the conversations we have about tanking over the last couple of years, there's really only one team in the National League that is truly tanking. That's the Marlins.
Yeah.
The rest of the teams are, you know, even the Reds, at least are trying. The Giants, while I do think that they're going to be a pretty miserable team this year, they were in on Harper right to the very end. You mentioned the Padres and adding Machado. I think the Pirates are going to have to show me they can hit a little bit, but they're going to be able to pitch and mm-hmm. stay at least with some of the Braves and Mets types early on, I think. So, I think the National League has gotten really interesting, and now we're seeing sort of a lot of those irrelevant type teams more over in the American League.
Well, Tim, we got an interesting 2019 season ahead of us. And, folks, if you want to check out Tim's stuff, go to Yahoo Sports. You can also follow Tim on Twitter at TBrownYahoo. Tim, thanks so much for coming on Hitting Season. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, John. We'll do it again.
Up next, some spring training news and notes. Gabe Kapler making some news as the Phillies wrap up their Grapefruit League schedule here over the next week. All that's up next right here on Hitting Season. And we're back on Hitting Season. So the Nick Pivetta breakout season feels like it's really going to happen here, kids. He was outstanding on Wednesday afternoon. 5 innings, 3 runs, 3 hits, 8 strikeouts, and 2 walks. He kind of tired in the 5th inning. But, man, he was firing his bullets early in that game. He looked dynamic. He looked unbelievable in this game. Right now, Nick Pivetta is the best thing to come out of camp for the Phillies so far all spring. He has just been absolutely lighting it up. 3.31 ERA this spring for him. And as a reward, I guess, Gabe Kapler announced that Pivetta will start game number 2 for the Phillies against the Braves to open the season, with Jake Arrieta being the number 3 starter. Now, Kapler said that Arrieta will get game number 3 because it's a Sunday night game. I love you, Gabe. I'm not necessarily buying that. I think that they have seen these two different guys pitch this spring, and they see Nick Pivetta has the better stuff than Jake Arrieta and is pitching better right now than Jake Arrieta. Again, I don't get into spring stats. I don't get worried about spring training statistics all that much. But you look at how Nick Pivetta is throwing, and you look at how Jake Arrieta is throwing. Arrieta struggled in a minor league game against the Blue Jays on Wednesday. And there's a little, I am a little bit concerned about Jake Arrieta. I would like to think this veteran guy can figure it out. And when the bell rings in game number 3 on Sunday Night Baseball, that Jake Arrieta will be there to answer the bell. But Gabe Kapler has put Pivetta at number 2 and Jake Arrieta at number 3. And I don't think that's just so that Arrieta can pitch on Sunday Night Baseball. I think right now, based on how they're throwing, the Phillies probably feel that Nick Pivetta is their second best starting pitcher. And he's throwing 96, 97. He got it up to 98, 99 a couple of times. He threw some nasty curveballs in his outing on Wednesday. I mean, it was filthy. Nick Pivetta was doing some filthy things on the mound, and he's been doing some filthy things all spring long. Just about every fantasy sports website you read is telling you Nick Pivetta is a breakout candidate. I wrote about Nick Pivetta for The Good Fight a couple weeks back, talking about the breakout season that just about everybody in baseball sees coming. If Nick Pivetta does not have a breakout season this year, then it's going to prove just about the entire baseball community wrong, because just about everyone is in lockstep in believing that Pivetta is going to have a very good 2019 season. Bryce Harper got his first hit in an official Grapefruit League game. He did that on Wednesday as well. He had gotten a hit in a couple of hits in a minor league game on Monday. But Bryce Harper now officially off the schneid as he got his first hit in an official Grapefruit League game. Gabe Kapler also told the media that Andrew McCutchen will be the opening day leadoff hitter. That he likes his combination of on-base skills and power at the top of the lineup, and that Cesar Hernandez will bat either sixth or seventh this year. So as I was fiddling with the lineup, here's a lineup that I kind of came up with. I've got McCutchen leading off, Gene Segura in the number two hole, Bryce Harper hitting number three, Rhys Hoskins four, JT Realmuto five, Odubel Herrera six, Cesar Hernandez seven, and Michael Franco at number eight. That's a pretty nice starting lineup. And I like Andrew McCutchen in the leadoff spot. Although, like I mentioned on a previous podcast, I do think Cesar Hernandez will probably get a couple of starts in the leadoff spot against some tougher right-handers. But for now, I think that's the way to do it. I think Kutch has shown that he can be a good leadoff hitter. He did so against the Yankees. He did so with the Yankees last year. And so I like the move. And I think you're going to see Gabe Kapler, now that he's got a stable base of players, you're not going to see as much mixing and matching, moving guys around. I think you're going to see a pretty stable lineup with Gabe Kapler. One thing Cap did say on Wednesday, after the game on Wednesday, was that he's going to at least start the season with a closer by committee, that David Robertson, Hector Neris, and Sir Anthony Dominguez would all get opportunities to pitch in the ninth inning. And I think that's fine. I think that Kapler, when he finds a guy who has success in the ninth inning, should keep that person there. We saw last year that I think Kapler wanted to do that. He had Hector Neris in the official closer's role for the first part of the season until he started giving up bomb after bomb after bomb, and they had to go to Sir Anthony Dominguez. And then I think they had Sir Anthony in the closer's role for a little while, but they kind of wanted to make him a multi-inning guy. It looks like right now that Kapler says Robertson, Neris, and Dominguez are all going to get a chance to close games, pitch the ninth inning, save different games. So if you're drafting your fantasy baseball team, I would stay away from Phillies relievers unless you don't use saves as a statistic. And then in that case, yeah, go out and get yourself some Hector Neris and Sir Anthony Dominguez. David Robertson, I think he doesn't have quite the strikeout rate that those other two guys have. But it looks like it's going to be a three-man closer by committee role, at least to start off the season, which could hurt some all-star chances for some of those guys, because we all know how much people value the almighty save in baseball still, even in this enlightened era of ours. We're also hearing that, looking outside the Phillies, Gio Gonzalez signed a minor league deal with the Yankees, and Craig Kimbrell is reportedly talking to the Brewers about a deal to strengthen up what is already the best bullpen in baseball. That would be, listen, if you don't have any starters worth a damn, then you better have eight bullpen guys that can start a lot of different games for you from start to finish, or at least give you innings 3 through 9. Kapler also noted that Roman Quinn and Tommy Hunter will start the season on the injured list. So here is my crack at the 25-man opening day roster, with knowing that Quinn and Hunter are going to be on the shelf. Obviously, the starting five is Nola, Arrieta, Pivetta, Eflin, and Velasquez. The starting infield is Hoskins, Hernandez, Segura, and Franco. Starting outfield is Harper, Herrera, and McCutchen. My bench, I got a 5-man bench of Kingery, Knapp, Williams, Altair, and Sean Rodriguez. I have Sean Rodriguez as the backup first baseman here, with Quinn out. When Quinn comes back, it'll be interesting to see whether they try to trade Nick Williams or send Williams down and try and trade Aaron Altair or release Altair. I think you need Rodriguez on this team to kind of back up Rhys Hoskins at first base. I don't love Kingery at that spot. You need more than one infielder, backup infielder, and if you're carrying Williams and Altair in the outfield, then you need another infielder. And aside from Kingery, and I think that's got to be Rodriguez. My bullpen, this was the toughest thing, is figuring out what the bullpen's going to look like. I have Robertson, Dominguez, and Neris all in there as well, with Nashak, Juan Nicasio, Jose Alvarez, left-hander, Adam Morgan, left-hander, and Edubre Ramos as basically the eighth man in that pen. I liked Victor Arano last year, but he has been getting lit up in spring training, so I think that they might be a little, if they had to choose between the two, my guess is they go with Ramos over Arano, because Arano has just looked really bad this spring. Going down to AAA and kind of getting it together might be the best thing for him. But that would be my 25-man roster, my best guess at the 25-man roster a week before the team heads up north to Philadelphia for opening day. Finally, Bobby Abreu will be the official inductee into the Phillies Wall of Fame this year. He played for the Phillies from 1998 to 2006, played over 1,350 games for the team, had a career 303 average with 195 homers, 814 RBIs, and a 928 OPS. He was a two-time All-Star, 2004 and 2005, 2005 Gold Glove winner, which he didn't deserve the Gold Glove that year, so I fully admit that. He was not a great defender, but he won the Silver Slugger in 2004. Also won that incredible home run derby where he really emerged on the scene as a superstar that night. Even though they're putting Bobby Abreu on the Wall of Fame, and I got to say, The Good Fight, when it was first started, was a website that was conceived to defend Bobby Abreu. Honest to goodness, in the mid-2000s, when the original creators of The Good Fight, before it became a part of SB Nation, they created the site to defend Bobby Abreu. That's what The Good Fight was all about, defending Bobby Abreu. And so you can say that The Good Fight was won. Bobby Abreu has his spot on the Phillies Wall of Fame. Even though he was very good during his time in Philadelphia, I do agree with people who think that going from Abreu to Victorino was an upgrade. Because I thought Victorino brought an intangible the team needed, brought that energy that Abreu lacked, plus he brought better defense. But there was something that Victorino brought to the clubhouse that Abreu didn't have, and for whatever reason, the Phillies played better once Victorino took over. And I don't think that's a huge slight on Abreu. I know I have talked to people who do think that Abreu was bad for the clubhouse. That not that he was a bad guy or a cancer or anything like that, but just that he didn't bring the fire or the energy that Victorino did, and that really helped to energize a young baseball team. So I do agree that the Phillies got better with Victorino instead of Abreu, but I don't want that to minimize how good Abreu was. He was a really, really good baseball player in Philadelphia, and I think deserving of being on the Wall of Fame. It was not a strong class this year. We talked about it on a previous episode of the podcast. Not the strongest class of all time, but I think Abreu probably was the most deserving out of all the people who were nominated. And, you know, I think it's nice that they do it every year. So Bobby Abreu going on the Wall of Fame. If Mike Lieberthal's on there, then I'm cool with Bobby Abreu getting on the Wall of Fame. Man, getting him in a trade for Kevin Stocker from the Tampa Bay Rays is one of the greatest swindles in Phillies history. Ed Wade gets the credit for that deal. All right, here is your stat of the week. The Braves announced that Julio Teheran would be their opening day starter. It's his sixth straight start on opening day. He's a career 1-1 with a 2.73 ERA in those starts. Kind of surprised the Braves did not go with Mike Foltynewicz on opening day. But here's the thing. Teheran could be in for a rude awakening, especially facing Bryce Harper. In his career, Bryce Harper has a .450 batting average, .577 on-base percentage, slugging percentage of 1,125, with 8 career home runs in 40 at-bats against Julio Teheran. And folks, that'll do it for episode 269 of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Tim Brown for coming on the podcast. If you haven't done so, gang, just a reminder to head on over to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed where you'll get Hittin' Season, Continued Success, and The Dirty Inning. Also, check out the Hittin' Season Patreon. Lots of great stuff up there now. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season. And if you wouldn't mind, folks, call that phone number. Leave a message, and the really good messages we will put on the air, 215-650-7270. Again, that's 215-650-7270, the Hittin' Season call-in line. You can also email us, hittinseasonpodcast@gmail.com. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.